Random House Audio presents Mr. Peanut by Adam Ross. Read for you by Mark Deakins. Where am I in the web of jealousy that trembles at every human movement? What detectives we have to be. Harold Brodkey. I went back upstairs and looked at my wife and felt and checked her pulse on her neck and determined or thought that she was gone. I became or thought that I was disoriented and the victim of a bizarre dream. Statement from Dr. Sam Shepard taken at the Cuyahoga County Sheriff's Office, Cleveland, Ohio, July 10, 1954, after consultation with his attorneys. When David Pepin first dreamed of killing his wife, he didn't kill her himself. He dreamed convenient acts of God. At a picnic on the beach, a storm front moved in. David and Alice collected their chairs, blankets, and booze, and when the lightning flashed, David imagined his wife lit up, her skeleton distinctly visible as in a children's cartoon, Alice then collapsing into a smoking pile of ash. He watched her walk quickly across the sand, the tallest object in the wide open space. She even stopped to observe the piling clouds. "Some storm," she said. He tempted fate by hubris. In his mind, he declared, "I, David Pepin, am wiser and more knowing than God, and I, David Pepin, know that God shall not, at this very moment, on this very beach, Jones Beach, strike my wife down." God did not. David knew more. And in their van, when the rain came so densely it seemed they were in a car wash, he boasted of his godliness to Alice, asked rhetorically if a penis this large and this erect, thus exposed, could be anything but divine. And he made love to his wife angrily and passionately right in the front seat, hidden by the heavy weather. He dreamed unconsciously, and he dreamed sporadically. His fantasies simply welled up. If she called from work, he asked, "Did something happen?" If she was late coming home, he began to worry too soon. He began to dream according to her schedule. "Taking the train today?" David asked in the morning. "Taking the train," Alice said. It was a block west to Lexington, where she'd pick up the subway down to 42nd Street. At Grand Central, she'd take Metro North 30 minutes to Hawthorne, where she taught emotionally disturbed and occasionally dangerous children. Anything could happen between here and there. On the edge of the platform, two boys were roughhousing. The train came barreling into the station. An accidental push. Alice spun round, did a crazy backstroke before she fell. And it was over. David winced. The things that went through his mind. From their window, he watched Alice walk up the street. A helicopter passed overhead. On Lexington, at the building under construction, a single girder was winched into the sky, and David imagined this was the last time he would ever see his wife, and this was the last image he'd have of her. And he felt that sadness well up and had the smallest taste of his loss, like the wish when you're young that your parents would die. There could be no violence. It was a strange ethics attending his fantasy. He dreamed the crane tumbling, the helicopter spiraling out of control, but he edited out all the terror and pain. There was Alice, underneath the wreckage, killed instantly, or sometimes David was there, by her side, inserted just before the fatal moment. He held her hand, they exchanged last words, and he eased her into death. "David," Alice said, "I love you." "Alice," David said, "I love you too." Her eyes glassed over. There could be no violence. But occasionally, David became a Walter Mitty of murder. He dreamed his own agency. He did it. He shot Alice. He bludgeoned her. He suffocated her with a pillow. But these fantasies were truncated. They flashed in his mind. Then he cut them off before the terminal moment because he never surprised her in time. He saw her recognize him as he came round the corner with knife, bat, or gun, felt her hand grip the arm that held the pillow over her face, and it was all too terrible to contemplate. "Whale!" he screamed at her, because she was enormous. "Goddamn blue whale!" She'd struggled mightily with depression, but was now back on meds. When they argued, they were ferocious. They'd been married to each other for 13 years and still went for jugulars and balls. Genius, she said. That drove him nuts. He was a lead designer and president of Spellbound, a small, extremely successful video game company. People in the industry called him a genius all the time, but during moments of doubt, David confessed to her that the games they produced were inane at best, mind-killing to his and to the kids who played them at worst. I wish you were dead, David screamed. I wish you were dead too. But this was a relief. The desire was mutual. He wasn't alone. Later, after the quiet time, he apologized. I'm sorry, he said. I shouldn't talk to you like that. I'm sorry, Alice said. I hate fighting with you. They held each other in the living room. It was evening now, and there were no lights on in the apartment. For hours, they'd been sitting separately in the dark. His love for his wife was renewed. How could he think the things he'd thought? They took a shower together. It was one of their favorite things to do. He put his arms against the walls and she lathered his back, cleaned the cheeks of his ass and behind his ears. When she shaved his face, she unknowingly mimicked his expression. After, she ran a bath. You know who I was thinking about today? David said. Things between them still felt delicate, bruised, and he wanted to make conversation.
Who?
Dr. Otto. She glanced at him and smiled sadly. Whether it was the associations his name conjured up, or how long ago it was that they'd sat in his class, it was where they'd first met, he couldn't be sure. At the moment, David was sitting on the edge of the tub, Alice's ankle in hand. He had soaped down her calf and was shaving it carefully. Hair grew in different directions, in different spots.
Have you spoken to him?
Not for years. I read in the quarterly that his wife passed away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm sure he's had a hard time.
And who hasn't? Alice said.
She completely filled up the bath. Her triceps swelled out separately like a pair of dolphin fins. Her breasts floated like twin islands. And she had the most beautiful face, the longest, finest chestnut-colored hair, and fabulous hazel-colored eyes. But she'd grown huge, and David didn't pity her, though he knew it was difficult for her to carry the weight. At her maximum this year, she'd reached 288 pounds. She'd bought a digital scale, doctor's orders, that flashed bright red numbers. She'd weigh herself in the morning as soon as she woke up, her hair hanging over her face as she stared between her feet.
I wish I were dead, Alice said.
And he wished her thin for her own happiness, but for himself, he wished she remained fat. He loved the giganticness of her, loved to hold on to her mountain of ass. If he made love to her from behind, he imagined himself an X-rated Gulliver among the Brobdingnags. It was the difference in proportion that turned him on. Closing his eyes, he exaggerated her size, made himself extra small. David holding on, his arms outstretched, smashing into her rear for life, life, life. She was not his wife, but a giant she-creature, an overlarge sex pet. His to screw, groom, and maintain. After they made love, she lay face down on the bed, palms turned up toward the ceiling, eyes glazed open and body motionless. The weight had not deformed her, only intensified her curves, widened her like the Venus of Willendorf. Alice shot dead by David's potent love. There were no children. In the end, it had been her choice.
I was talking with Marnie the other day, Alice said.
David, working in his study, minimized the screen.
And? She's pregnant.
Alice waited. David waited too. He put his elbow on the desk and rested his chin in his hand.
And they just found out that their second child is going to be a girl, Alice said.
And?
They only have a two-bedroom apartment.
Go on.
And the son, he can't share a bedroom with a daughter, but they can't afford a bigger place.
So?
So they're going to have to move out of the city.
David took off his glasses, gently placed them on the table, then got up, walked to their bedroom, and leaned on the jamb.
Can you imagine? Alice said.
She was focused on the TV. The man who knew too much was on A&E. They looked at each other, smiled knowingly,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?